Where are you going? Bernard, are there good news?
It's time again for Donald
Trump.
Theater.
No one knows what's up or down. Black or white.
Legal.
Or
impeachable.
Everything is make-believe in Donald
Trump.
Theater.
So let's
pull
the
curtain
back.
We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
Logic is an enemy and truth is a menace.
Truth isn't truth.
I hear it's fake news, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
I think it's fake news, okay? Now, would I do that? Absolutely.
House Democrats are taking a closer look at the ABCs of impeachment to make their case against President Trump.
And now, The Late Show's ABCs of impeachment.
Abuse of power.
B is for
betrayal.
C is for
corruption.
D for
damaging testimony.
E is for
election interference.
F is for
foreign government.
G is for
get him out of office.
H is for
Hunter Biden.
I is for
idiot.
J.
Joe Biden.
K is for
knowledge of what occurred.
L is for
leaks.
M is for
Mick Mulvaney.
N is for
Nancy Pelosi.
O is for
obstruction.
P is for
perfect phone call.
Q is for
quick pro quo.
R is for
Rudy Giuliani.
S is for
systematic efforts to undermine our elections.
T is for
transcript.
U for
Ukraine.
D for
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman.
W is for
whistleblower.
X is for
extremely troubling.
Y is for
why do we keep arguing about what happened when it's clear?
C is for
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
It would appear the president is
stupid. Watergate 2. The scandal that's like getting a rubber chicken stuck in your ass. It's obviously kind of funny, but also actually serious, and something really needs to be done about it. Now, this week, the House continued calling witnesses ahead of public impeachment hearings that will start next Wednesday. But the president has already figured out who is really to blame for everything and chose his daily helicopter yell time to share it with everyone.
It's called the swamp. And you know what happened? And you know what I did? A big favor. I caught the swamp. I caught them all. Let's see what happens. Nobody else could have done that but me.
That might actually be Donald Trump at his Donald Trumpiest. First, screaming something nonsensical, I caught the swamp. Then, doubling down on it, I caught them all. And finally, bragging about how great he was at doing something that didn't mean anything in the first place. Nothing there made any sense, and yet you just know, in 2 days, his website will be sold out of I caught the swamp hats. Because that's the world we live in right now. But that wasn't even the most desperate defense of the president employed this week, because that honor must go to Lindsey Graham, a man whose very face looks like a nana who just found out what thruples are. Graham argued that he knows the president didn't demand a quid pro quo with some spectacular logic.
What I can tell you about the Trump policy toward the Ukraine, it was incoherent. It depends on who you talk to. They seem to be incapable of forming a quid pro quo.
So, wait, to be clear here, Graham's defense has gone from there was no quid pro quo to Trump is too dumb to do one. And that argument alone is terrifying. Graham is essentially saying the president's an idiot. He's like a baby stumbling around aimlessly in a diaper full of his own boom boom. And that is why he must stay in office and retain access to the nuclear codes. But while stupid Watergate 2 continues to unfold, this week actually brought news from the previous version, Stupid Watergate 1, Rise of the Planet of the Stupid. You may remember the plot here was actually pretty solid. Essentially, it was about the Trump campaign's contacts with Russia. Who talked to whom and what did the president know? A lot of that came out in the Mueller report, but certain details, like those involving WikiLeaks, were redacted because they pertain to ongoing cases. Well, this week, one of those cases reached a courtroom, and at the center of it is Roger Stone, a steampunk Andy Warhol who is in a lot of trouble.
Roger Stone's trial for allegedly lying to Congress got underway in a Washington, D.C. courtroom today. Federal prosecutors argued that Stone lied to Congress about his efforts to connect with WikiLeaks in 2016 because the truth looked bad for Donald Trump.
Right. Roger Stone is accused of lying to have the president's back, not to be confused with having a lying president on his back, because Stone has this actual tattoo, which is simply the weirdest tattoo I have ever seen. Not just because it's of Richard Nixon, but because it is somehow both too big and not big enough. And the placement of it is terrible. It looks like someone center-justified a Nixon JPEG at the top of a blank Word document. Stone stands accused of misleading Congress about his efforts to get information from WikiLeaks. He claims that he never spoke directly with Julian Assange and testified in 2017 that he'd instead relied upon an intermediary, specifically this man, Randy Credico, a radio host and comedian. Credico has denied being that intermediary, and Stone has not reacted well to that because prosecutors read some of Stone's messages to Credico in court, and they are rough.
Stone writes to Credico, "You are a rat, a stoolie, you backstab your friends. I am so ready. Let's get it on. Prepare to die."
Holy sh! Although I will say, it's actually unsurprising to hear mafia-style threats coming from Roger Stone, a man who looks like his entire wardrobe consists of mob boss Halloween costumes from the discount rack at Party City. And yet, Stone has argued that "prepare to die" has been taken out of context. Last year, he claimed the only reason he said that was because Credico told him he had terminal prostate cancer. Except there's two problems there. One, Credico says he doesn't have terminal prostate cancer. And even if he did, that's a weird thing to say to someone who does. There is a reason why hospital gift shops don't sell prepare-to-die balloons. That's just not something humans tend to say to each other. So Stone is in some serious legal trouble here, and legal trouble costs money. But don't worry, because he's got that covered.
You can help me in my epic struggle for vindication and survival by ordering your very own personally signed Roger Stone Did Nothing Wrong t-shirt. Please order yours today.
That the president's extortion of Ukraine, A, had a chance of working, and B, was so unseemly, is because Ukraine is mired in a war with Russia, a war that has taken the lives of 13,000 people, a war that they are fighting right now as we speak, which is why getting that military assistance was so critical to Ukraine's livelihood. Ambassador Bill Taylor has been on the front lines of that battle in Ukraine. He shared his experience with Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney.
You go to the front, you go to Donbass, with Ambassador Volker, I believe. And you're on the bridge, and you're looking over on the front line at the Russian soldiers. Is that what you recalled?
Yes, sir.
And you said the commander there, the Ukrainian commander, thanked you for the American military assistance that you knew was being withheld at that moment.
That's correct.
How'd that make you feel, sir?
Badly.
Why?
Because it was clear that that commander counted on us. It was clear that that commander had confidence in us. It was clear that that commander was appreciative of the capabilities that he was given by that assistance, but also the reassurance that we were supporting him.
So Volodymyr Zelensky had promised during his election campaign that he was going to ease tensions with Russia. People were so tired of the war. And he won an incredible 73% of the vote, which was unprecedented. So he had a huge, huge mandate. So when he came into power, he was going to negotiate with Russia from a position of strength. And, you know, that's something that Taylor talked about today, how important that was for him to be able to negotiate with the Russians from a position of strength. But then when it became public knowledge to the entire world, and of course to Russia, that the Americans were holding up the aid that they had promised already to Ukraine, that showed the cracks in the U.S.-American relationship, and that sent a message, a signal loud and clear to Russia that maybe America doesn't exactly have Ukraine's back like they said they did up until now, and maybe the Russians can, you know, push their own advantage in any forthcoming negotiation. So when I was on the front lines last week and I was talking to members of the 92nd Brigade, I asked them point blank. I said, do you think that you can get a fair deal from Russia without the strong support of the United States? And soldiers there told me, no, without the U.S. and without the EU, there's no way that Russia is going to hold to the terms of any agreement. So for the past several weeks, Zelensky has been pulling troops back from certain areas along the front lines, three sectors so far. And the idea is that if the troops are further away from the enemy, if they can't see the enemy, then there's going to be less opportunity to exchange fire and, you know, for the soldiers to get killed. Because Ukrainian soldiers and, of course, people on the pro-Russia side, they're getting killed week in and week out. And this is a strain on Ukraine. It's been going on for 5 years. So, you know, one of his promises is to bring that down. And that's what he's trying to do. But how do you get the other side to believe that they really need to hold to the terms of such an agreement if you're a superpower, a former superpower like Russia? If you've got another superpower backing your adversary, right, that's one thing. But if that superpower's, you know, resolve suddenly disappears, what are you left with? For those of us who watch Ukraine day in, day out, we knew that something was up starting in May when Giuliani started sending these weird tweets about Zelensky surrounding himself with people who are enemies of Donald Trump. And, you know, that's the kind of language that people reserve for their adversaries, not for their allies. If you have something to say to a partner, to an ally, then you say that behind closed doors. You certainly don't tweet about it and say that you're surrounding your presidency with enemies of our president. That's almost like a hostile overaction.
Right.
So
that
rung alarm bells, really, for those of us who were in Kyiv at the time, who were seeing these tweets, and that's when we started just wondering what the heck is going on.
Eight Ukrainian soldiers died in the month of August because they didn't have proper weapons. 50 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and wounded in the month of September. There were harms and there were fouls. There are dead people. That there is a shooting war going on in Ukraine. The United States has undertaken to help Ukraine. Congress voted massively to help Ukraine. Soldiers died while waiting for weapons that President Trump delayed.
GOP Pictures presents...
Bing, bing, bong, bing.
Graham with the Wind, starring Lindsey Graham. An epic tale about a man who took a stand.
If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing.
And then change that stand with the wind.
I'm not going to read these transcripts.
See the Constitution go up in flames with John Bolton.
Frankly, Pelosi.
I don't give a damn.
And Devin Nunes.
I don't know nothing about
quid pro quo.
filmed in stunning spineless scope.
I've written the whole process off. I'm written him off. I think this is a bunch of BS.
Graham with the wind.
And God is my witness. I'll never
trust Lindsey Graham
again.
On the eve of the public impeachment hearings, on the eve of these historic public impeachment hearings,
impeachment hearing eve.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with Republicans screaming and Democrats dreaming, impeachment is near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the impeachiest season of all. Getting dirt from the Ukraine to help your next campaign will be your downfall. It's the impeachiest season of all. There'll be transcripts for reading, the president's tweeting that this whole thing is a hoax.
Hoax.
There'll be Nunes and Jordan ignoring extortion, executive privilege, and votes. It's the most wonderful time, yes, the most wonderful time for the most obvious crime.
Lyshenko was a source for Fusion GPS's operation to dirty up the Trump campaign, including the compilation of the Steele dossier.
President Zelensky didn't announce he was going to investigate Burisma or the Bidens. He didn't do a press conference and say, I'm going to investigate the Bidens, we're going to investigate Burisma. President Zelensky doesn't announce it before the aid is released on the 11th.
Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out.
You asked the witness a question. The witness
I withdraw the question. What did President Zelensky actually do to get the aid? The answer is nothing. He did nothing. He didn't open any investigations.
We're not talking to any country. We're talking Ukraine. Ernst & Young said one of the three most corrupt countries on the planet. President Trump said, let's just see. Let's just see if he's legit. So for 55 days, we checked him out.
This irregular channel of diplomacy, it's not as outlandish as it could be. Is that correct?
Nunes' opening statement was like a conspiracy potpourri. You know, CrowdStrike and Chalupa and Fusion GPS. I don't even understand how a swing voter watching that could even understand or translate what he was saying, unless they were kind of steeped in this, Sean Hannity-esque, conspiracy tale narrative that they've been spinning. And so I think that set the tone.
People have been making fun of the didn't get away with it argument. Rightly so. You know, there's this Sideshow Bob in jail.
Convicted of a crime I didn't even commit. Attempted murder. Now, honestly, what is that? Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry? Do they?
Yes, in some ways, it's the best. It is kind of the best argument they have, because at least it doesn't require them to say it's fine for if he had gotten away with it, and also to deny the facts that are produced.
I think it's the second best argument, right? Stefanik made that in the post-game press conference. She said there was no investigation in the end into Burisma. They got their aid. They didn't get their aid under Obama. That's that. The problem with that argument for me is that that Zelensky was booked on CNN, right? And they were 2 days away from getting away with it, from winning the chemistry Nobel Prize award, right? So there's some holes in that.
And the only reason that the money was released, as far as we can tell, is that the whole whistleblower complaint started to run
right.
long.
Two days beforehand, right? The whistleblower complaint was on the 9th, and then on the 11th they released the aid. So I think there's some holes there. The Haley argument over the weekend, which was, this is the death penalty. these guys have been trying to do this for three years. Is this a death penalty type crime?
Yeah.
I think that's their best argument. I disagree with it also because it was trying to impact the next election, which is why I think it's a death penalty crime. But I think that's the most compelling.
Listening to all the evidence, everything I've heard and read in this investigation, it seems to me that the president of the United States either committed extortion and bribery of a foreign official or attempted extortion and bribery of a foreign official. When President Trump got President Zelensky on the phone on July 25th, he was talking to a desperate man, wasn't he? President Zelensky was desperate to protect his country and make sure that he had foreign assistance from the United States. Is that right?
President Zelensky is very interested in U.S. support, both assistance and political support.
What would have happened if the aid had gotten cut off, Ambassador? What would have happened to President Zelensky's career? And what would have happened to the Ukraine?
The assistance, if the assistance had been cut off, he would have been much weaker in his negotiations with the Russians. He would have been much weaker on the battlefield.
The Russians may have taken it as an invitation to actually take military action against Ukraine. Is that right?
The Russians always look for vulnerabilities, and they know that the United States has supported Ukraine. If the Russians determine or suspect that that support is lessened or not there, they will likely take advantage.
They could have pounced.
They could have taken advantage.
So he had a desperate man on the phone, and he asked a desperate man for a favor. And based on your testimony, it sounds like, begrudgingly, President Zelensky may have actually agreed to do that favor and investigate the Bidens and Burisma. Is that right?
President Zelensky does say in the transcript that he will pursue the investigations.
So we know that President Trump asked for a favor to help his political career, and it appears as though the president of the Ukraine agreed to that favor. Do we know why it didn't actually happen? Do we know why there was no announcement in front of CNN or to CNN about an investigation?
Mr. Castro, as we've determined, as we've discussed here, on September 11th, just before any CNN discussion or interview, the hold was released. The hold on the security assistance was released.
But we don't. So the hold was released. Is it possible that the White House released that hold because they knew that a whistleblower had basically turned this in?
I don't know, sir.
Do you think that's possible?
I'm not in a position to judge.
So we have a president who the other side has claimed or has defended the president, saying that the aid went through, that there was never any investigation. But the president attempted to get those things done. And it looks like there was an initial agreement by the president of the Ukraine to actually do those things. So, ambassadors, is attempted murder a crime? Is attempted murder a crime?
Attempted murder is a crime.
Is attempted robbery a crime?
Neither of us is a lawyer, but I
think anybody in this room could answer that question.
I think that's right. I'll go out on a limb and say, yes, it is.
Is attempted extortion and bribery a crime?
I don't know, sir.
It may not be tomorrow, but it'll be sometime during this process, public process. That there will be a stunt, that Republicans are going to pull a stunt. They want to delegitimize these hearings. They do not want to act as though the hearings are legitimate, fair, reasonable, or purposeful. And one of the ways they may do that is to take a page out of all people, Abby Hoffman, the Chicago 7 trial, and do something to make a mockery of the proceedings.
Well, are you asking if I had those thoughts, or if I wrote that I had those thoughts, because there's a difference? I don't know. I've never been on trial for my thoughts before. The difficult thing about defending a conspiracy charge is that all the government has to do is prove one act, and then they connect everybody to it.
Last Friday, a member of my staff told me of events that occurred on July 26th. While Ambassador Volker and I visited the front, this member of my staff accompanied Ambassador Sondland. Ambassador Sondland met with Mr. Yermak. Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff, at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. The The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. At the time I gave my deposition on October 22nd, I was not aware of this information. I'm including it here for completeness. As the committee knows, I reported this information through counsel to the State Department's legal advisor, as well as to counsel for both the majority and the minority of this committee. It is my understanding that the committee is following up on this matter.
And Ambassador McFaul, as we listen to that, it was noticed that there are two more depositions with brand new witnesses that will be heard from on Friday. Your thoughts on the impact of that?
Well, I want to say two things about it. First, the substance is a bombshell. And if Ambassador Sondland wants to come and testify to say it's not true, we can do that. But it stands as fact now, as Ambassador Taylor said it. But I want to underscore how completely extraordinary it is for any ambassador to call the president of the United States. To do so on an open cell phone line is another thing. Let's put that aside for now. But this whole, this alibi that President Trump, he barely knows who this guy is. I don't know who he is. And yet he is calling him from Kiev to report on what President Trump obviously wants to know about his quid pro quo. And I think that really undermines this argument that there is no direct connectivity with the president. And the second one, if I can get it in, Tim Morrison, the other part of this I just want to underscore, he's the senior director for Russia, Europe, Ukraine. He's the president's most senior advisor at the White House. I had a job like that working for Obama. With respect to Russia. And when I spoke to any U.S. government official, everybody knew that I was speaking on behalf of the president. I was the person that knew his thoughts and views on Russia, and in this case, on Ukraine. So this notion that it's all hearsay and phone talk, no. You have two people very close to the president, Ambassador Sondland calling him on his cell phone from a Kiev restaurant, which I've never heard of before, and Tim Morrison corroborating the evidence and the witness, the things that Ambassador Taylor testified today. The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.